That's what we prayed for, that the Spirit of God would take these words that we were writing down and translating and make them live.
Shortly after her husband, Jim Elliott, and four other missionaries were speared to death trying to reach out to a tribal group in Ecuador, Elizabeth Elliott was able to live and work with the same tribe for 2 years. It's a remarkable story of forgiveness, love, and the power of the gospel to change lives. Through her visits here on Gateway to Joy, Elizabeth continues to reach out with the timeless message of hope and healing. Here's your friend, Elizabeth Elliott.
You are loved with an everlasting love. That's what the Bible says. And underneath are the everlasting arms. This is your friend, Elizabeth Elliott, talking with you this time about writing an unwritten language. Many of you are familiar, I'm sure, with the fact that there are thousands of unwritten languages in the world. They've never had any form of writing whatsoever. And there are hundreds of missionaries working on the reduction to writing of those languages. It was in order to do that kind of work that I became a missionary back in 1952. I had taken special training at the University of Oklahoma in linguistics and learned things like how to recognize a nasalized vowel or a voiced consonant. We don't think much about nasalized vowels in English because we have them only contiguous to nasalized consonants. We have two nasalized consonants in English, M and N, and normally the vowels which are next to those in a word receive a certain amount of nasalization. But when I was studying the Auca language of the eastern jungle of Ecuador, I noticed very quickly that there were a good many nasalized vowels. For example, the root of the vowel to speak is ha, a nasalized A. The same letter is the root of the verb to see, but it's not nasalized. Ah. Ah as opposed to ah. Can you hear the difference? And yet a foreigner who's not trained to hear those things and to recognize their importance might pronounce them both the same and then say, oh, well, what's the difference? I only forgot to nasalize one vowel. So you have to become alert to things like that and realize that the tiniest distinction may be of enormous importance in speaking the language correctly. I've told you how I used to wander around with my notebook and my pen trying to write down what I heard the Indians say. This is anything but easy, especially when the people don't realize that you really don't understand the language. Since the Aucas had never heard another language spoken, were so isolated that most of them had literally never seen a stranger, they had no concept of different languages. They took it for granted that all human beings are born with the ability to speak Auca, or at least very quickly to learn to speak Auca. And to see me as an adult, apparently normal woman, unable either to hear or to reproduce accurately what they were saying, convinced them that I must be retarded, or at least very strange. And I was always going around with this notebook. I had a tape recorder, and whenever I could, I would try to record their conversations, sometimes the descriptions of the hunt, which the men would give when they would come back in the evening and sit around the fire while the women were cooking whatever they had brought back. They would all be giving their accounts of the hunt. It wasn't the most ideal situation for recording because they usually talked simultaneously. So my best bet was to try to get one of the children to come to my house because the children had much more patience than the adults, and they would sit there and just talk. Tell me about what they were doing or where their father had been or what their mother was doing or what animals or birds they had seen. And I would record it. And then I would get the child to sit there while I would play back maybe one or two syllables. Then I would say to the child, turning off the tape recorder, I would turn to the child and say, what did the machine say? And then the child would give me those two or three syllables. And I could see the position of the teeth and the tongue and the lips and record the sounds accurately from having heard it two or three times on the tape recorder. One reason why I had to get the tape recorder to do the repeating was that the people would not repeat exactly what they had said. If I said, "What did you say?" sometimes they would give me a whole paragraph of explanation, which did not include the word that I was trying to get down. If I were to say to you, how much do you think you would get down on paper on the first run through? Well, of course, I could repeat it exactly the same way again, but the Aucas wouldn't have done that. But even if I repeat it for you the second time, how much would you get down that time? Well, I'm just giving you some examples of what we were up against. Rachel Saint was also there. She was trained by the Summer Institute of Linguistics, as I was. We had exactly the same kind of training. And so we would try to put our heads together occasionally and work things out together. But it really wasn't all that easy. The word for understand was exactly the same as the word for hear. So when the Indians had said a phrase for me, then very often they would say, "Inyimi," meaning, "Did you hear me? Do you understand?" And usually my answer had to be, "Inyinamindawa," which means, "I didn't understand a syllable. Try it again." And they would laugh and they would examine my ears and say, "What's the matter with your ears? Haven't you got holes in them? Or are you deaf? Are you stupid?" And I would have to spend hours filing suffixes. There were a good many suffixes on Alka words. Then maybe you've never stopped to think about the difficulties that we give to foreigners who are trying to learn English by the many truncations in our language. We shorten things down. For example, somebody comes along and says to a friend, "G-chet?" Now, most of us could understand that that means, "Did you eat yet?" But it gets shortened to "G-chet." So if the poor foreigner was standing there with his pen and paper trying to write down what the American had said, he would put down "G-chet." It would take him a very long time to file those two syllables before he discovered that it really was, "Did you eat yet?" four syllables. And Valerie, my daughter, put me absolutely to shame in the learning of language because she was only 3 years old. So it was a whole lot easier for her. One of the earliest phrases that she learned was "Ha-akam," which means everybody listen to this, when her poor mother was desperately trying to hear and reproduce this impossible language. She could talk circles around me. And so she would be calling to everybody in the clearing, "Come and listen to this," as I struggled along. In my second year, I really had gotten to the point where I could make myself understood, and I could usually understand most of what was said to me. So Rachel and I began preparing primers so that the Aucas themselves could learn to read what we were trying to write down. There are four things that have to go on more or less simultaneously. You're trying to learn the language, you're writing it down, you must translate something into the language for them to read, and you must teach people to read. Obviously, it doesn't make any sense to write a language down if you're the only one that can read it. So the people need to be taught to read. It doesn't make any sense to teach people to read if they don't have something to read. So you have to do the translating. So that was our job. When I got to the point where I could ask questions, I asked some very pressing questions that had been puzzling me for a very long time. I wanted to know about how they killed my husband and why. I got two tapes from two of the men that did the killing, Gikita and Minkayi. It was amazing how their detailed accounts matched almost exactly. It was not pre-planned. They had a great ambivalence about whether these five missionaries were really cannibals, really treacherous, really wanting to kill them, or whether they were good people. And it was sort of a last-minute decision to kill them. Were they killed quickly? No. I learned the answer to that question. It was a long fight. Well, I wanted to ask the question about the costume that the Aucas wore, this piece of string around their hips. If they wanted to be very dressed up, sometimes they wore a piece of string around their upper arm or around their thigh. But I said, "Why do you wear the string?" Well, they said, "Would you expect us to go around naked?" Dayuma was a young Alka woman who had been out of the tribe for a number of years. She had become a Christian, so she was sort of our mouthpiece. She began to teach them the Bible. And as we began to get across the very rudimentary principles of the gospel, we realized that we ourselves were also the message. Communication is what we're there for. And the Alkas were very eager to believe anything we told them and to conform immediately. Dayuma told the people that they ought to pray, and so they all wanted to pray. She taught them about baptism. They all wanted to be baptized. She wore clothing, we wore clothing, they wanted to conform to that. We knew, of course, that the adequacy of the medium does not guarantee satisfactory results of the message. Jesus himself was the personal expression of God. He came into his own creation, and his own people would not accept him. And yet he was faithful in the telling. He expressed perfectly and completely the person of his Father, and those who accepted his witness were given power to become sons of God. You and I have been given that word. We have believed it. We are responsible to see that it is faithfully communicated, visibly and verbally. How far from perfect we are in the telling. We are not by any means always the visible expression of God. But the writer of the letter to the Corinthians said this, "You are an open letter about Christ, delivered by us and written, not with pen and ink, but with the Spirit of the living God, engraved not on stone, but on human hearts. The letter of the law leads to the death of the soul. The Spirit alone can give it life." That's what we prayed for, that the Spirit of God would take these words that we were writing down and translating and make them live.
You've been listening to Gateway to Joy with Elizabeth Elliott, author of over 20 books, including Shadow of the Almighty, The Life and Testament of Jim Elliott. Join us next time for more encouragement and challenge from Elizabeth Elliott. This has been a production of the Bible Broadcasting Network.